Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
Hello and welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast, episode number 7. I'm Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm Frank Natel.
And on today's show, a federal judge blocks the Justice Department from removing lawyers in the census case. Trump hosted an exclusive party with Jeffrey Epstein at his Mar-a-Lago estate. A new report claims it was just the two of them and 28 girls. Tucker Carlson blasts Representative Ilhan Omar, and she calls him a racist fool, which is beautiful. And NBC News last night, I believe it was on the Rachel Maddow show, where when it broke, obtained many significant incident reports that document dozens of accounts by migrant children held in a border detention facility in Yuma, Arizona, not Texas. But first, Frank, you have a guest?
Yeah. As you know, Master Patsy, we've been trying to get new guests for our show, and we're excited that we have a few guests lined up. And our first guest today, who is just basically going to join us to listen in and may say hello to our guests that listen to this show, is a good friend of mine who we're hosting in our home this week. His name is Carlos Javier Fernandez. He's with us from Spain. And why don't you say hello to the people that listen to the podcast?
Hello, how are you?
And thank you so much for joining us, Carlos. Carlos is from a town outside of Madrid in the La Mancha region of Spain. And would you tell our listeners where that is? Where in Spain is that?
Well, I'm from Miguel Esteban. It's a small village from Spain. And there are a lot of grapes. Yes, we have a good wine.
Good wine in that region, yes. And you were showing me your family's vineyard estate, and it's beautiful. I would love to visit someday. I hope that we can come visit your family someday.
Yeah.
And Carlos has been with us since Saturday. And I will tell you this much. I mean, he can speak for himself about this, but Patsy, one of the things that's just really cool and eye-opening is when we've taken Carlos around the city of Newcastle and visit with family and friends, and then also to Pittsburgh, it gives me a new perspective about our hometown and about our region in Pittsburgh. Because, you know, I mean, Carlos is a great guest, and he's enjoying it, but I think he's very genuine when he says that he loves this area. You've kind of fallen in love with Newcastle and Pittsburgh, right? I mean, you have a appreciation for this area. You like this area, right?
I love this area, especially Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh also is amazing.
Yes, we went to the University of Pittsburgh yesterday and toured around the nationality rooms, and we went up to Mount Washington and the Strip District. And, you know, we take some of that stuff for granted, Patsy, and we have some real gems around here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but Carlos is here to help teach young children to how to play soccer and to teach it at a pretty advanced level. And I've attended the camp that he's helping to teach, and it's a wonderful, wonderful camp. And they care very much about the children. They care very much about the game. And he was here to watched a little bit of the Women's World Cup. Remember when the United States women won the World Cup? And what did you think about that game when we watched the women? Just a little bit.
Well, I think that this important.
He had a good time when he was watching it, and he said that that he knows that, like, watching them play, they're the best women in the world. So I think that that's what we'll leave it there with Carlos, because he wasn't necessarily prepared to talk at the podcast, but he wants to listen in and enjoy what we're going to talk about today. And thank you for being here. Thank you for saying hello.
Thank you.
Yes. So, Master Patsy, we can move on to our topics for the day.
Absolutely, Carlos. Feel free to chime in anytime you like. If you have something to say or you have a thought, please feel free to just say whatever's on your mind. Frank, right up your alley. We'll start it right off the bat. Federal judge late Tuesday refused to let the Justice Department lawyers withdraw from a dispute over the citizenship question on the 2020 census in a case that continues after the Supreme Court's ruling in late June. Apparently, 11 lawyers from the DOJ asked Judge Jesse Furman of the Southern District of New York on Monday for permission to step down from representing the government in the dispute. AG William Barr said that given the department's decision to press ahead on the issue, I can understand if they're not interested in participating in this phase, which kind of tells you how strong he feels about this. DOJ official said privately that Barr acted before the lawyers could officially object to further work on the matter. But the judge said that before lawyers can get off the case, court rules require them to explain why they wish to withdraw, and that the DOJ request was patently deficient. That's especially true, he said, given that legal briefs are due in a few days on whether the judge should issue an order preventing any action by the government to put the question on the form. Frank, if you can, kind of talk everybody through this a little bit, and I'd be love to hear, you know, your thoughts, and obviously, you know, your expertise.
Yeah. What's interesting about this? Getting a little bit of an echo, is that I love the judge's decision because it's based solely in law. I mean, there's a lot of precedence for why the judge will act, and when I say acting, it's ruling in the way that he is. Because even if I, as a private attorney, have a client that says, I don't want you to represent me, or, you know, we have a disagreement, and then I'm going to go to court for that private attorney or private citizen. If I tell the judge I want to remove myself from the case, it depends on the situation, or it depends on where we are in the case. I mean, if we have a hearing coming up, or if we have papers due on the case, if the case is far along in the life of the case, the judge is not going to be happy with an attorney trying to withdraw from the case at that late hour or when something's due. Because it certainly slows down the process. It throws into question the direction of the case. Who's going to take over? How are we going to proceed? Who's going to adequately represent this client that now has a live case in front of them? So these are all very valid things that the judge is concerned about, and things that would be raised in any case. So there's no, in my mind, there is no political reason that anybody can attribute to this judge's decision. It's just soundly based in etiquette and precedents and law for handling cases, and the way judges like to have order around representation while a case is live and active in court. So that's my first. And you know, secondly. The issue that this happens is indicative of what kind of a cluster, you know what, is going on with the office that Barr is now the head of, right? Because if you've got a situation where your charges or the people that you're in charge of are walking into court and saying, I don't want to do this. I mean, that's I'm going to use a slang term. That's hella embarrassing, man. You know, you know what I'm saying?
Well, to your first point, I think you started your first point by saying nobody in their right mind.
Right.
Yeah. Well, our president addressed the judge's decision on Twitter, writing, "So now the Obama-appointed judge on the census case won't let the Justice Department use lawyers that it wants to use. Could this be a first?"
Oh, boy.
So, there you go. You know, I don't even know how to handle this, right? I'm just tired of him always being the victim. Let's just put it that way. The ACLU chimed in with Justice Department owes the public and the courts an explanation for its unprecedented substitution of the entire legal team that's been working on the case. The Trump administration is acting like it has something to hide, and we won't rest until we know the truth. That was from Dale Ho, director of the group's Voting Rights Project. Now, in their defense, the judge did allow two of the 11 lawyers to withdraw. One left the DOJ and the other is no longer in the civil division. So, you know, that kind of makes sense that he would let them go.
Yeah, I mean, there is an element of we want people to be free to move about the workplace, right? There is an issue where we say in our society, you can't be forced to work for somebody. It's not slavery. You can't be forced to work on something that that you don't. It's to stay in one location or to stay in one place of employment beyond the time that you want to be there. This is still an at will, you know, most states and federal work is at will. However, you know, as an attorney, you have an obligation when something's filed in your name, under your name, you signed off on it. You have an obligation to at least see it through to a point where somebody else can handle it. If you can't handle it anymore, and there may be, look, they may have looked at these two people and said, you've left employ either in the civil division or you left employ altogether. And there are other people who are still here that are as knowledgeable or more knowledgeable than you were about the case. So your involvement or your role is not crucial to the next step in the case. So we're going to let you out.
Right. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
I love how they're still trying to get around the Supreme Court. Well, the Supreme Court basically just to settle this once and for all, Frank. If I understand right, or if I heard right, whenever the Supreme Court ruled on this, basically they didn't really strike it down as much as they said, you really need a good reason to do this, and you really didn't give us one.
Right.
Yeah. Am I right in saying
that? I think that says it. Pretty much says it all.
Okay, so it's not like, you know, they're trying to sidestep the Supreme Court. They're just, the Supreme Court kind of left the door open for them.
Right. I mean, they can come back. They could certainly come back and say, here's our valid reasons. Now make a decision on this. And ultimately, you know, I think they'll all get to a point where they're going to be satisfied one way or the other, you know, and they'll be able to rule on it. But they need the adequate argument to be made, not just that these people want out. You know, we want to hear all the reasons and come to us with a compelling reason why they have to be let out at this moment. You know,
I wonder if the ACLU and the people who are opposing them are gonna go back and produce the emails from the deceased guy that pretty much said why they wanted to put this in the census.
I mean, every opportunity they have, I would say they should interject that, right?
Yeah, and if it's a little early to do it now.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. Well,
you mentioned Trump's tweet, and I know, you know, before we move to topic number two, which also involves the president, but he also had a tweet, and I know this isn't necessarily on our list of topics, but he had a tweet the other day where he was talking about Fox News' weekend program. And we might want to revisit this a little bit when we talk about, you know, what you mentioned earlier about Tucker Carlson, but he blasted the weekend team, and he talked about the programming, and he talked about the programming at CNN and other organizations, news organizations. And I really found that, I know we've had many instances of him tweeting about things like this, but I found it to be extremely beneath the office of the president and almost farcical that he spent the better part of his Monday morning talking about programming decisions on network news.
Was this the one where he pretty much teed off on Fox News on Sunday, saying the network, known for its conservative views, is now loading up with Democrats and even using fake, unsourced New York Times as a source of information?
That's exactly that one. I mean, this is our president, right?
Uh-huh.
This is also the president that has at one time, as you mentioned, hosted parties with the esteemed Jeffrey Epstein. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Before we go on, I should say that my source for the whole DOJ thing was NBC News. From Business Insider this morning, according to information that they have, President Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein The guy charged this week with sex trafficking and conspiracy to commit sex trafficking were once the only attendants at a party at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, where roughly two dozen women, I believe was actually what, like 28, were brought in to entertain. And this is coming from a quote-unquote entertain. This is coming from a former Trump associate. And it was actually told to the New York Times and now Business Insiders picking up on it. In 1992, the women were flown in for a quote-unquote calendar girl competition that Trump had requested. At the very first party, this is quoting the former Trump associate, George Hourani, H-O-U-R-A-N-E-Y. At the very first party, I asked who's coming tonight. I have 28 girls, and he said it was just him and Epstein. This guy added, I said, Donald, is this supposed to be a party with VIPs? You're telling me it's just you and Epstein? He also apparently once warned Trump about Epstein. He said, look, Donald, I don't know if you know Jeff really well. I can't have him going after younger girls. I'm putting my name on this. I wouldn't put my name on it and have a scandal. Well, apparently he did. There was a quote credited to Trump after the a decade after the party, the 1992 party, where Trump talks about Epstein saying he's a lot of fun to be with. It's even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side, no doubt about it. Jeffrey enjoys his social life. Obviously, in the last couple of days, Trump kind of backed off from that, saying I was not a fan of his, I can tell you.
That's a typical thing for him to say.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah. Anytime somebody gets into trouble that's close to him, he distances himself from them. But, you know, before they get into trouble, he loves them.
Right. 28 girls. So you got to figure this was what? When we say this was 1999?
Was it 99 or 99?
All right, so we're looking at 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Roughly. So Epstein then would have been 46. I don't know how old Trump is, so he was probably into his 50s.
What were the girls
in the mid-50s?
Or mention of what the girls were?
And 28 girls. So we're not talking women here. 28 girls.
Was there any mention of their ages?
Only that it keeps saying that they were young. That's all it said.
Well, you know, I guess we have to wait till some of the more, you know, specific details come out on this. But I want to surmise. Let's just guess that some of these girls were in the age range that Jeffrey Epstein supposedly liked women, girls, because Donald Trump himself told us he likes them on the younger side, and maybe some as young as 14, right? So, and he's also been brought up on charges for underage sex trafficking. So let's presume for a second that possibly some of these women or girls were under the age of 18 at that time, okay? Stick with me on this.
Okay.
Will that in any way change the opinion of the diehard Trump fans regarding Donald Trump?
No.
Absolutely not.
No chance.
Will it change the opinion of people who are just fringe followers of politics who may have voted for Trump because they didn't see a better option and they're just not sure who they're going to vote for next time?
Yeah, I think it could.
Okay.
I do. Okay. I think that if you were somebody who straddled the fence and really wasn't a big supporter, just for whatever reason didn't trust Hillary because, well, you're stupid and watch Fox News, then yeah, I could see them now looking at this, assuming that they're no longer, you know, watching that propaganda machine and saying, you know what, this got to stop. That's enough. There's no way I'm gonna continue to support this. I will grant that I can't say with any kind of certainty how big that number is that are willing to do that. But I do think that there are some that are saying, you know what, that's enough.
Yeah. I mean, we're yet to see all the fallout from this, and we're yet to see what Jeffrey Epstein has to say when he's, you know, actually under oath on some of these cases that he's being brought up on, you know, indictments and charges, et cetera. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of information that's going to come out.
Do you think, well, obviously, I'm pretty sure, and obviously I don't know it for real, but I'd be willing to bet an obscene amount of money that Trump's lawyers are already talking to his and his lawyers and are promising a whole lot if he does not say a word.
I mean, they'd be dumb not to be in contact in some way.
Right. Well, yeah, right. I mean, honestly, you wouldn't be doing your job if you weren't.
Right.
But I promise they're offering this clown the moon and the stars just to shut up. And I'm wondering, because I know nothing about this guy. Right. I know nothing about him. I do know a lot about how pedophiles act and react simply because of having conversations with my wife. But they're very eager to please.
Yeah.
Normally.
Yeah.
So this whole idea of them getting in front of Congress and with all these threats of whatever, I'm not so sure how strong of character he's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. And I and given his age, and he's in his 60s, right? I mean, I think you were saying
he's what, 66?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to want to preserve as much of his remaining life outside of jail as possible. I mean, to the extent that there is anything like that possible for him, he's going to want to try to do that.
Yeah, and they're going to have to be careful, because if they're going to say something like he's getting, you know, he's getting 60 years and they'll drop it down to 40, well, that still doesn't do him much good, does it?
No.
So I'm curious to see how this is going to play out. This is a big wild card. But man, I think that a lot of the people who kind of held their nose and voted for him are gonna this and the Mueller thing might be enough to get people to say, you know what, that's enough of this guy. And let's not forget, he didn't win the popular vote to begin with.
Right, and exactly. And I think that, you know, when you look at the stink that's around him. All of the stink that's around him, you know, we stop talking at this moment, you know, as a society about Paul Manafort, his campaign manager. You see occasionally a story come up about him, but he's not every day in the news. But, you know, his campaign manager is serving a lengthy federal prison sentence, you know, and this is who he surrounded himself with. And he surrounded himself with people like Jeffrey Epstein, who is clearly, you know, he escaped. The proverbial Jeffrey Epstein escaped the bullet, you know, a few years back when he got some sweetheart deal. But it was known at that time that he was messing with underage women, underage girls. And now it doesn't look like he's going to escape this bullet anymore. Right. So, but this is somebody who was a close associate and friend of Donald Trump. So the stink around him is getting worse. It's mounting in terms of how many people keep coming out of the woodwork with problems. And, you know, I don't know how much longer the people who are on the fence and held up their nose, as you said, will continue to do that. And how much longer the people in the Republican Party, people like Justin Amash, who said, look, it can't be party over country. There's bound to be more of those folks. I mean, may not be an avalanche of them, but there will be enough that it's going to make a difference. As you said, he didn't win the popular vote to begin with.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, don't forget the sweetheart deal that he got was a very, was absolutely an illegal sweetheart deal that he got.
Yep.
And on a side note, Frank, I've been wanting to ask you this all day. And, you know, I just kept thinking about it, you know, since I read that whole thing. The deal that this guy got, where was it Acosta, I believe it was at the time?
Yeah.
Where he promised not to let the victims know about this until after, and the judge found him guilty for breaking the law. What happens then? I mean, it's not like this guy's going to be sentenced or anything. So is he just like, he was found to do this illegal and we just all go on our merry ways now?
I mean, it's a great question. And I honestly don't know the answer to it. I would assume that there have to be proceedings started and there has to be some form of vehicle that would bring the opportunity to hold him accountable for that. It can't just be, you know, even if it means that the judge who handled the previous case summons Acosta to his chambers and says, I'm going to open a hearing wherein I'm going to examine you about the decision you made surrounding the plea offer, et cetera, that was handled in my courtroom, and you're subject to my rulings on contempt on those proceedings. I mean, that could be a possibility. It could be a distinct possibility that maybe some other charging authority would see fit to bring specific charges against him for violations of the law. But I don't know the exact answer to it, but it leaves us both wondering what vehicle will bring justice around that issue. And I'm anxious to see, if anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, there has to, you know, the balance has to be restored here. You know, the yin and yang have to be in balance,
yeah.
And it doesn't appear that that's the case yet. I mean, we don't know, you know, we don't know if that is done and that's it. It's all done and decided, and we move on because I couldn't find anything anyhow that really addressed that. You know, like what happens next? They just said this judge found it to be illegal, and that was it. You know, I have no idea. I have no idea what happens after that.
Right. Well,
yeah, I don't know. And no one said. I've been looking all over the place for it, you know, and I can't find it anywhere. So,
well, I'm going to tune into that as the week next week goes on. But I as you know, I've been fairly occupied this week. So, but and it's to the tune that I haven't even heard about until you brought it to my attention. Tucker Carlson once again resurrecting one of his favorite methods of attack to attack the representative from Minnesota, Ilhan Omar. Tell us a little bit about what went down there.
This is coming from both Media Matters and CNN Business. Last night on Tucker Carlson's variety show, let me see if I get this right. He decided to go after Ilhan or Ilhan?
I've heard it said Ilhan.
Ilhan? Okay. It's not Italian, Frank. I don't know. You know? Ilhan Omar is living proof that the way we practice immigration has become dangerous to this country. There's a quote from Mr. Carlson. Maybe we are importing people. Oh, and while he's saying this, across the bottom of the screen in Fox News, it says, Ilhan Omar, America is racist, cruel, and unjust. Okay, so just imagine seeing that while you're hearing this bullshit. Maybe we are importing people from places whose values are simply antithetical to ours. No country can import large numbers of people who hate it and expect to survive. He said that... she's on the road this week telling voters in the United States that the United States is an awful country. The quote is, America's institutions are built on white supremacy. He just went on and on and on. Carlson blasts Omar for her critiques of the United States, saying said the congresswoman is, quote, living proof that the way we practice immigration has become dangerous to this country. He said virtually every public statement she makes accuses America of bigotry and racism. This is an immoral country. She says she has undisguised contempt for the United States and for its people. Carlson said this should warn you not worry you, I'm sorry, not Warren, worry you, and not just because Omar is now sitting member of Congress, Ilhan Omar is living proof that the way we practice immigration has become dangerous to this country. A system designed to strengthen America is instead underwhelming it. I probably should stop here and just point out the obvious that Tucker Carlson's a total and complete piece of shit. Omar herself quickly responded via tweet, because I guess that's not how we do things for now on. She, which I thought this is an absolutely brilliant response. Not going to lie, it's kind of fun watching a racist fool like this weeping about my presence in Congress. She added two crying laughing emojis and said, "No lies will stamp out my love for this country or my resolve to make our union more perfect." And the best line yet, "They will just have to get used to calling me Congresswoman." You know, her and AOC are definitely cut from the same cloth. They just know how to do this stuff. Andrew Lawrence, a staffer to Media Matters, called last night's anti-Omar commentary an absolutely stunning racist attack. Yeah, Tucker Carlson is about as racist as they get. I think the only person that's less racist on that variety channel is Laura Ingraham. And she might be the only one more racist than he is, because this guy's a total and complete piece of shit. Your thoughts?
You know, I really haven't had a chance to see this. It doesn't surprise me that he would attack Ilhan Omar. You know, it's certainly from his playbook. He wants to divide people, and this is a way, it's a flashpoint to divide people. You know, people can dislike a representative. Certainly, they can dislike the representative and say, that's not the person that I really want to represent me. And other people can say, that is the person that I want to represent me. But to make it a flashpoint about, you know, immigration, it's clearly just trying to foment hatred between people. You know, it's just trying to bring people into an angry state and whip up the anger against one set of people and for another set of people. So I really, that's about all I have to say about it, because I don't know enough about it, number one. And number two, it's almost, in my mind, just shameful that we even have to deal with this kind of information coming out to the public through what's an entertainment organization that disguises itself as news, that, you know, these kind of things have to be continuously, you know, spewed upon the public. That it just feels, it feels skeevy, you know. that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah. You know what, that's a really good way to put it. It just feels skeevy. It does. Very few people, I think, overall understand the outlook or the viewpoint of an immigrant, or how an immigrant's outlook than we do, right?
Yep.
She was born in Somalia. Her family had to flee during the country's civil war. After 4 years in a refugee camp in Kenya, she arrived in the United States when she was 12. You know, our families had it a lot better coming to America, right? They didn't have to go nearly through a refugee camp or anything like that. I understand the outlook and the viewpoint of people who are coming to this country who are not your WASP white bread, you know, who are ethnic. One of the biggest problems is you have the Fox Newses of the world who like to spread fear, because fear is what keeps you coming back, because it's obviously not for their content. And they're capable of pointing out and making everybody who doesn't look and sound and act exactly the same way you do as the scary other. right? And they do a masterful job of it. I mean, it's impressive how good they are at making somebody else look like the big bad wolf. And the longer this shit goes, and the older and more vulnerable their viewership gets, and I mean vulnerable just because they're getting old, as you know, as you get old, you know, I mean, we're feeling it, right? You start to deteriorate. The more it's going to sink in, and the more their message is going to hold on to these people.
Yeah, because it's the only message that's resonating with the remaining crew that's listening. So, but I'm at the point where, you know, people like him just repulse me to the point where I almost don't even want to like acknowledge that he exists.
I know. The fact that he can get on a network and just do something like this, and there's literally no repercussions at all, is just it's absurd. That's the scary part, is just that you have an entire network, an entire entertainment network that can just say or do whatever it wants, and there's literally no repercussions at all.
Yeah, and I guess in a way it's, you know, it's just I would like to see them fall from, you know, grace in the sense of ratings decline and lack of viewership and lack of sponsorship through media, through advertisement, to the point where they die, not die a death, but that the network dies to the point where it's just not functional anymore to keep doing that. Not through any other action, but just through lack of viewership.
Yeah, and you almost want it to be a very slow, painful death for this entire network. And you're right, not for the people in it. We don't want death on a person. We do want the network to just cease to exist.
Yeah. But on the other hand, we hope that real legitimate news agencies like, you know, NBC News, who occasionally engage in, more than occasionally, hopefully engage in actual gathering of news, has continued to gather news even when it's ugly to read, as in the fourth topic of our topic. And again, I haven't had much time on this. I'd like to hear your thoughts about the topic.
I'm sorry, repeat that, Frank?
I was just saying that, you know, other news agencies or real news agencies that do occasionally gather actual news, like NBC News, has obtained incident reports about what's going on with migrant children in Yuma, Arizona.
Oh yeah, you know what? You're really good at this transition thing. I got to tell you, you're up there. You're better than I am.
I don't know about that.
No, you are, man. You got this down. Two significant incident reports, and we'll explain what significant incident reports are. Obtained exclusively by NBC News. This was last night. It broke on the Rachel Maddow show. Before we go any further, a significant incident report, an incident report, period, is something that a caseworker or a case manager will provide. In this case, will be to an agency of the federal government. I'm not real sure which agency that is, but it's a caseworker that is been assigned to these kids that are in these detention centers, right? So they'll interview these kids, or they'll observe them, or whatever it is, and they'll write up a report, and they'll just basically just send this report up the chain of command. And I'm not real sure what happens to it after that. Apparently somebody will review it, and they're supposed to make recommendations or change policy or whatever it is, you know, on the fly, pretty much, because of how dynamic the situation is. So in that sense, it's a really good way that, you know, it's a really, I don't want to say progressive way, because people get the wrong idea of what we mean by progressive way, but it's a really good way to handle a very dynamic situation like we have in these detention centers. Anyhow, the two reports have been released. Report number one, and I'm just going to kind of go through it for you here real quick. Report number one, Miner describes, and this is probably the worst part of the whole thing, probably the worst of the two. Miner describes sexual assault by CBP official. That is the Border Patrol, okay, official. Date reported was 6/5/2019 at 11:45 a.m. According to the report, and like I said, I'm just going to read over here for you real quick. On 6/5/19 at 10:15 a.m. during a weekly update meeting, CM, which is the person who wrote the report, with a meeting that the person had that wrote the report had with the miner reported that on April 8th, 2019, at approximately 9 p.m., she was inspected by a DHS, Department of Homeland Security officer, who was heavyset, tall, with a beard in front of many other migrants, males, females, children. The miner reports officer asked her to lift her shirt up to the bra line, and then he put his hands inside her bra and touched her breasts. Her breast, I'm sorry, singular. Miner reported she felt embarrassed as the officer was speaking in English to the other officers and laughing. Miner also reported that another immigrant was there in the room and made an inappropriate comment, which was translated into, how are you showing your belly button with so much care? Miner then said he asked her to pull her pants down from her waist to verify she did not have another pair of pants on underneath. However, the miner said that he then pulled them down himself and touched her waist and pulled her underwear. Miner reported officer then asked her to spread her legs and arms and patted her down in a way that made her feel uncomfortable as she felt he groped her body, her breast, and her private parts as well. Miner reported he continued to laugh and speak English with other officers during the entire process. No one else was injured. Staff response said the caseworker provided empathetic listening and support as well as verbalized relief and sense of safety. The UC will be receiving individualized counseling as needed, as well as weekly group counseling. This case manager will continue providing support as needed and will communicate and coordinate with the assigned clinician to assure the UC's needs are being met. Recommendations: assign clinician to follow up as needed. Was not reported to state licensing, and the report, the incident was not investigated. That's bad, and that's probably the worst of the two. The second one is child describes retaliation by CBP. Date of report was 6/18. During initial intake, the client disclosed that he was under DHS custody for more than 72 hours. The minor entered the U.S. on or about 6/17/2019. The client stated that during the time he was under DHS custody, he was treated well and was provided with food and water. Client stated that the water tasted like chlorine. He disclosed that there were about 30 minors in the detention center as well. The other minor started to complain about the food and water that was being provided. Client stated that the minor started protesting about it because of it. The officers took out all the sleeping mats away. Client stated that during his time at the shelter, he was sleeping on the floor. The client disclosed that during his stay, he was given the opportunity to shower on the 10th day. So he went 9 days without a shower. The client disclosed that during his stay, the underpants were very dirty from his trip. He was unable to wash them, and he decided to keep them on until he was then admitted to the program. Client stated that he never asked for clean undergarments, no physical, sexual, or verbal abuse disclosed by the client, and the client was apprehended in Arizona. Pretty much the same recommendations. Nothing was reported to state licensing. The incident is not being investigated. The same follow-up and yada, yada, yada. Same thing. The first one is disturbing to say the least. Frank, I will tell you in a not so proud way that hearing this description of how this officer treated this female, this minor female, I got to tell you honestly, I'm not exactly surprised.
And it's a shame that we would even be at this place, like we've talked about before, where we have to, you know, kind of come to grips with the fact that these things are not as shocking because of what we've seen people be capable of.
Yeah, and the fact that I believe it was last week you and I had talked about the type of personality that these positions are attractive to begin with, that does not surprise me in one bit that you're getting clowns like this who are your officers.
I just hope that, you know, justice prevails somewhat swiftly, that you know, now that these things are coming to light. And that's the thing. I hope that people hear the word that comes out of these things. You can't hide forever. Information does come to light eventually. So let's just hope that things like this are greeted with real justice.
It's absolutely unbelievable. What's happening there is becoming more and more disturbing. And it's one thing whenever you kind of sit there and you say, I wonder if this or that's going on. And, you know, I've trained people in that position, and my wife's had to deal with them for literally a quarter of a century. And, you know, she's telling me these things are going to happen before it's reported that they're happening. And it just continues to I don't want to say surprise me or bewilder me, but it continues to shock me that grown adult people even allow themselves to be put in a position to be accused of that. Because I can tell you honestly, I can show you how to do stuff like this, and you'd never put yourself in a position to be accused of anything.
Well, I'm discouraged and dismayed again at where we are in our society. And it's hitting home, you know, recently you mentioned to me before we start our podcast that here locally, we've had a tragedy, and it's just society's breaking down. I hope that we can recover, but it's very discouraging. I'll just leave it at that. Tell us about what happened here in Newcastle.
A man just out of jail, that would be when Keith Burley, 43 years old of Edinburgh, okay, who recently was paroled after 20 years for, how about that, a murder, was actually a robbery that went bad and he ended up killing somebody. So he was in for 20 years and recently just got paroled. I want to say was out for maybe a month, and two nights ago he got into an argument with his girlfriend. They say it was over a cell phone. Okay, if you say so. They actually pulled into the Newcastle Fire Department's parking lot, if you know where the fire department is, you know, downtown.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so they actually pulled into there around 9 o'clock, 9:30-ish. Apparently, he just beat the shit out of her, threw her out of the car. Now, she had two kids in the back seat of the car, threw her out of the car, takes off, goes to a house in Union Township. For people who don't know Western PA or Newcastle, just it's basically on the west side of town, where the kids are in the house. There's two other kids in the house who were upstairs playing video games. They were home alone. The two kids come downstairs, and here he is with the one of the two kids that was in the car. And I'm not going to speculate what happened during that time, but he ends up stabbing this kid multiple times with what turns out to be a, was just a pocket knife. It was a pink, it was just a pink folding pocket knife. Stabbed this 8-year-old multiple times and then leaves. He ends up going to Youngstown, and so let me back up. He kills this kid somewhere around 11 o'clock that night. Shortly just before 9 a.m., while walking down Market Street in downtown Youngstown, a bunch of U.S. Marshals saw them walking down the street. Apparently, they had a description of this guy. They walk up to him, asked him if he was indeed Keith Burley. He said yes, he was, and they arrested him right there on the spot, just walking down the street.
Wow.
Right now, he's being held at the Mahoney County Jail, waiting to be being moved. Some reports say 7 years old. Yeah, other reports say 8 years old. This is KDKA 2, Channel 2, CBS, Pittsburgh, that's describing the kid as an 8-year-old. I heard 7-year-olds, that the kid was actually 7, but whatever, it's close enough. At that point, do you really care? It's a child. That just got killed, that just got stabbed. The victim's name, kid's name is Mark Mason. Mark Edward Mason. Charges filed against Keith Burley include several felony charges, including criminal homicide, aggravated assault, and kidnapping. Frank, I gotta be honest with you. I don't know what it would take to kill an 8-year-old kid. What kind of piece of garbage stabs and kills an 18-year-old kid? Or, I'm sorry, 8-year-old kid.
It's beyond my comprehension as well. I just think, you know, it's not a breakdown of society that is fueled by one thing or another. It's just an utterly clear indication that the house is burning down.
I don't get it. You know, and it's one thing, right? I mean, you know, because it happens here at home, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of hits you a little harder. You and I, you know, both born and raised here, so to see that happening in our hometown it's a little hard to stomach, I think. I mean, it's, like I said, it's bad whenever it's a kid to begin with, but whenever, you know, you're looking at this kid and you're seeing the names of the parents and the people involved, and it's like, we're a small town, you know, so we know the names, right? Or you know somebody who knows the family or something like that, right? There's always like no more than a one at best, that were at worst 2 degrees of separation with just about anything that happens around here. And it's sickening. It's just sickening that this piece of garbage would do something like that.
And it, the family lost an 8-year-old child.
8-year-old child.
For a cent.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's nothing that can gloss over it. There's nothing that can make anything feel better about that. Nothing about saying life goes on. It's all trite.
It's all trite.
And I really don't feel good about any of that. So, you know, we do have a life to live. We do have to move forward with life and hope that anything that we can do in little ways and positive ways can change things. You know, we engage in enjoying music, life, trying to bring some humor and levity to people around us, our loved ones and family and things like that, and just provide support for each other. Try to lift some things up as we can. And I don't know, when we get in these kind of moments, it's really hard to do.
Well, I might give you a little something to cheer you up a little bit, and we'll end the part of, I want to end it on a high note, because that one's really that's a punch in the gut. And since we have a soccer/football guest, the U.S. Women's National Team World Cup parade was today, through the streets of New York. Whenever who is apparently become the face and the voice of our women's team, Megan Rapinoe.
Rapinoe.
I'm sorry. Like I said, I'm used to Italian. showed up Friday. Was shirt up with the parade, ready to party. She had a glass of champagne in her hand. It was just a total party for the whole thing. They paraded the it was a nice long parade. It was really well done. Was the stereotypical New York City ticker tape parade that, you know, the historic, you know, like I said, stereotypical. When you think of New York ticker tape parade, this was it. Okay, so you don't have to watch the old black and white films. You just have to watch this one. It was it. Made it to the courthouse where Mayor de Blasio gave everybody on the team a key to the city, and Robin Roberts was actually the host for the whole thing, and she does such a good job. She's insane. And they had a couple of members of the team came to the podium, said a few words. Jill Ellis said a few words, and her quick little speech was really, really good. And it's a shame that it's not being covered as much as Megan Rapinoe's is, but it was really good. It wasn't as good as Rapinoe's, but it was really good. If you haven't seen it, get on YouTube and look at it and watch it. It's about 7 minutes long. I'll give you a couple of highlights real quick. Whenever she was up at the podium, she was talking, and one of the quotes were, the quote is, "We got pink hair and purple hair. We have tattoos and dreadlocks. We got white girls and black girls and everything in between, straight girls and gay girls. This group is so resilient, so tough, has such a sense of humor. It is just so badass. There is nothing that can phase this group. We're chilling. We got tea sipping. We got celebrations. I couldn't be more proud to be a co-captain with Carly Lloyd and Alex Morgan with this team. It's my absolute honor to lead this team out into the field. There's no other place that I would rather be, even in the presidential race. I'm sorry, I'm busy." That was actually her quote. it was absolutely. But then she went on to say, "This is my charge to everyone. And this is the part that I really wanted to get to. We have to do better. We have to love more, hate less. We've got to listen more and talk less. It's our responsibility to make the world a better place. Every single person here, every single person who's not here, every single person who doesn't want to be here, every single person who agrees and doesn't agree, it's our responsibility to make this world a better place." It was just an absolutely fantastic speech that she gave. It was obviously, I mean, it was very obnoxious, but that's her, right? It's part of the charm. If you get a chance, get on YouTube, check it out. It's 7 minutes of your life that's not wasted. It's absolutely not wasted. Just a great way to end the pod, a very positive note to end the pod. I don't know if you got a chance to see it or not, Frank, but if you didn't, you have to.
I caught some clips of the parade, but not the speeches. I'm definitely going to watch that. I'm just really proud of the fact that we, as a country, have at least been able to produce a program that has won multiple World Cups. Yes, it's the women's program, but if you watched this tournament, if you watched it from, you know, beginning to end, and you watched the games that were the knockout stages and the championship game, the semifinals, both the semifinals and the championship game, it was high-level soccer. And I've had friends who back in Baltimore who talked to me about when they watched the women's World Cup final and then watched the Copa America final and then watch the Gold Cup final, which were both men's contests, that while they were good soccer matches, the most compelling, the most interesting one to watch was the women's. The other ones were not as interesting. In fact, at times were boring. But, you know, my point is, I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything, but just as a fan who watches games and who has been, you know, more than mildly interested in helping to coach young people in a variety of sports, including soccer, the level of play that I'm enjoying watching on TV from women's at that high level, Women's World Cup, it's definitely something that makes me proud to say that we've produced this champion here. So I'm glad we've ended with that. And I will say, you know, to our listeners, keep listening. We will have guests who actually who are going to speak on topics that we do present. And I'm happy to have had a guest here today who is a guest of our house. He doesn't have anything to say about the topics that we talk about. And that's not why I asked him to say hello to us. I just wanted him to say hello to our listeners and just to relay the fact that he's enjoyed being here. And it's nice to open the eyes of, open my own eyes and say, we have a nice area. We have our flaws here, just like anything else, but we have a nice area. And I'm glad to host people from other places, especially a good-hearted, nice person who has really opened my eyes to some good things in our world. So I'm glad he was able to just listen in with us. He doesn't, he's not offering any opinions here today. He just offered his hello. And I'm glad he was able to sit here with us and listen to this and just experience listening to our BS for a little while. So in the future, keep listening, folks, because we will have announcements of folks who are going to come on the show and talk about topics. Most specifically, we're going to have when Mueller testifies, we're going to have another attorney who's very involved in social justice, who's agreed to come on, and we'll be publicizing her appearance as the week approaches. So I'm excited for that. And then we may have another guest the following week. So we're going to keep spicing things up.
Fantastic. And as always, folks, like Frank and I say every Wednesday, Master Grant and I say every Sunday, your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. It truly does. So to everybody listening, and to Frank and our guest Carlos, thank you as always. And until next week, goodbye, so long, and God bless.
Thank you.
Bye.
Week. Goodbye, so long, and God bless.
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Holy Sh** with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, Holy Sh**.